The assumption that women are naturally better caregivers is part of patriarchy.
About a decade ago, you would be hard-pressed to spend a day on the internet without hearing the term social justice warrior thrown around. In the early 2010s, there was a clear shift into more conservative values on the World Wide Web, as much of the online atheism community splintered off from online feminism. And with it came a bunch of terminology mocking these left-wing activists, such as references to being triggered, entering safe spaces, and of course, being an SJW. Because this is an extremely simplified summary of the era, I wanted to dig deep into the nuances of the rise of this term, as well as the backstories behind the faces of the SJW freakout niche where people would film IRL political fights and throw them up online to go viral. So with that, let's break down the long history of the most famous supposed social justice warriors of the 2010s, along with the rise, overuse, and fall of the moniker. Easily the first well-known face of the SJW movement is that of Big Red, the nickname given to Toronto resident Chanty Binks. Her online presence traces back to 2011, when she launched her Tumblr, STFU Everything. It was a place for the feminists to post about her activism. Binks often performed eccentric stunts like dressing up as various reproductive organs and holding cartoon sperm. This is a type of feminist that I realize doesn't really exist as much anymore. She went viral early on for a pro-choice parody she made of the CeeLo Green hit song, Forget You. See, you're trying to take the rights from the sisters I love, and I'm like, forget you. The post garnered thousands of likes, which she used to promote the rally Walk for Choice Toronto. Later that year, she was asked to sing on the jazz album Noir Street. I could see from the start. Despite having a surprisingly decent singing voice, she primarily developed a reputation for being relentless in her beliefs. This was first seen in footage from a Toronto Pride parade dated July 2012. Binks can be seen wearing a shirt that says, "Don't Republicans." She was captured arguing with a homophobic Christian preacher, who recorded and uploaded it to YouTube.
Say that again, I'm preaching my what? Say it how you said it. My F and what?
You're being disrespectful by showing up and spewing your Jesus at a fucking pride event.
Most of the commenters sided against him, though she appeared to confront anyone that disagreed. Strangely enough, Binks encountered the same preacher again 3 months later. It was at a zombie walk, which was also caught on video.
Don't take away the microphone and interrupt me like you did in the library!
Her aggressive approach was refreshing to many groups that largely felt unspoken for. But this started to backfire when her notoriety spiraled out of control. What you need to understand is that at the time, Binks was attending the University of Toronto. Well, the campus had also held several meetings for the Canadian Association for Equality, abbreviated to CAFE. CAFE was controversial for its promotion of men's rights activism. Well before the likes of Andrew Tate and Fresh and Fit took over the movement, in early 2013 they scheduled an event at the university called From Misogyny to Misandry, to Intersexual Dialogue. It was supposed to be held on April 4th, but it got interrupted when Binks, alongside other members of the local anarchist party, crashed their event. They crowded the halls outside and started chanting before pulling the fire alarm to forcibly end the meeting. The entire ordeal was caught on video, including their subsequent confrontation outside. It was uploaded to YouTube the next day under the title, MRAs and Feminists Arguing. Binks can be heard loudly spouting off questions from a sheet of paper, which included some attempt at a dialogue.
Feminists do not want you to lose custody of your children. The assumption that women are naturally better caregivers is part of patriarchy.
If you would shut the
These are things that we're agreeing on,
and these are things that you've actually all got skewed views on.
Number one, shut the
y'all shut the fuck up for a second too.
Well,
so I can
he just
my
listed
list
how they
so
are.
So you guys
for.
Can actually no, answer no, 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 those okay, questions.
Shortly after, Binks gloated, went to an MRA event, OMG, lulled and trolled forever. I'm not sure of the specifics, but it was held at the University of Toronto yesterday and featured speakers who wrote books like Legalizing Misandry and shit like that. Fuck, even Tumblr underlines misandry. Did you hear that, MRAs? Both my phone and Tumblr know misandry isn't real. The ordeal was starting to spread online, which she proudly acknowledged. I got a message from my bro. The video of me and the MRA is the 103rd post or something on Reddit. Neither my brother nor I posted this, so they can't find me. Lolling forever. Of course, they did find her blog eventually, and she taunted them for it. Oh no, the trolls are flooding my inbox with man Fifi tears. I should get them all a cup for all their cries. The backlash escalated until Binks was doxxed. The harassment was documented in an article by feminist news blog We Hunted the Mammoth. They showed her info being shared openly on various MRA message boards. It got to the point that one site, A Voice for Men, publicly begged readers to stop. I have had several people message me recently with a link to a website that apparently has the identity of the really loud, obnoxious, and completely moronic redheaded woman. I am asking everyone to cooperate with me in not linking to that website or posting any of her personal details in the comments here. We Hunted the Mammoth obtained a statement from Binks who expressed fear for her life. They somehow found my Facebook. They found my Tumblr. They found a Twitter account that I don't even use. They even found an old dating site profile of mine with outdated info. In about 12 to 24 hours, I got about 400 to 500 messages on my blog. They made a meme of me. I don't know how many haters I have, and I don't know where they are. I can't be sure at any given second if I'm ever outside my house, if anyone is going to recognize me and try to hurt me. If the feminist wanted attention for herself, she surely did get it, as the original video went on to amass over 1.7 million views, a soaring viral success at the time, and is now considered the first definitive entry in the SJW freakout genre. If that wasn't bad enough, she was also highlighted on Canadian television during coverage of the event.
It's kind of surprising to me that we're at this point where the somehow that men's rights, issues that face men, and there are issues that face men about custody issues, about suicide rates, about the boys' education crisis, which we touched on the inside story earlier, that somehow that's taking away from women or attacking women.
Her distinctive bright red hair led her to get the nickname Big Red, which in combination with her zany expressions were perfect for representing what would soon become the crazed radical feminist archetype. There was something just so distinct about the look of many of these feminists from the era. They all seemed to have short haircuts dyed very bright colors, quirky thick framed glasses, very bright lipstick colors, and a very similar fashion sense that I can't quite pin down. And from my research, this appears to be the first time the internet really latched onto the look, and also provided a nickname for one of these people. Big Red's likeness grew ubiquitous in conservative memes, almost synonymous with the term SJW itself, which had just recently hit the online lexicon. There was a song remix and even a separate nickname for her called Penny Fool. The hate became so popular, it quickly escaped any overt political connotation. Somehow, young conservatives who had been beaten down during the Bush years had something in pop culture to latch onto. While most came to view Binks as a punchline, others viewed her actions more seriously. They felt interrupting the event was hypocritical given her stance on the right to protest. It impeded free speech on top of wasting the time of firefighters. One such video was by The Amazing Atheist, which received over 2.5 million views. It was at this point that you saw a lot of the skeptic YouTubers at the time switch over from trashing fundamentalist Christians to feminists. And since these people were now trashing people on the left wing instead of the right, you now had conservative Christians watching the content from the atheists. It was really a wild time and was a cosmic shift in online culture. Binks continued arguing on Tumblr, first stating, "Fuck you, I do what I want." Later, she elaborated in defense of her behavior. "I don't even know the context of this fucking video, yet you assume I'm just coming in and yelling and screaming and telling everyone to shut the fuck up. While I finished the list, I attempted to get them to realize we do see eye to eye on many things, like the article I was reading suggested. They wanted to mansplain and tune me out, so fuck them. I'm not gonna be compliant and polite and docile in all the patriarchy expects women to be. Fuck that shit. Being nice has gotten me nowhere, and it's time for me to be a badass. By the end of the summer, Big Red had a page on both Know Your Meme and Encyclopedia Dramatica. Her infamy caught the eye of feminist documentarian Casey Jay. Jay was in the process of making a documentary about the men's rights movement. Binks was interviewed and reflected shortly after its recording. I did the interview today for the documentary on the men's rights movement. It went well and I made them all laugh. They should be finished filming in January and I think she said it'll be in post-production next year. Binks was ecstatic and felt she impressed the documentarian. It was considered, quote, that time she blew the mind of the documentary filmmaker. However, these celebrations aged extremely poorly. The doc evolved into The Red Pill, which released on October 7th, 2016. It was quite controversial as Casey hears from MRA's slowly growing sympathy for their side. In fact, she goes so far as to state she no longer considers herself to be a feminist. Needless to say, Binks is not portrayed in a flattering light.
A lot of MRAs say that feminism doesn't fight for the rights of men. What would you say to that?
Cry me a river. Really, because feminism is a movement about the discrepancies when it comes to women's equality, because we're not up, we're still not there yet.
It was just another point of ridicule as the Big Red meme persisted on. A year later, FlashGits uploaded a cartoon titled Feminazi, which starred a character that heavily resembles her appearance. Binks responded, so they've made a cartoon parody of me, complete with Anita Sarkeesian around the 2 minute mark. 2 years later and they still spend so much time obsessing over me. Who really hates who? On April 30th, 2016, a Facebook post was made by an employee at the Liquor Control Board of Ontario. It showed a photo of Binks they took from the store security camera. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Chanty Binks, aka Big Red. In response, Binks created a GoFundMe to pursue legal action. Her campaign accuses the culprit of being a neo-Nazi MRA, and the turmoil induced by her virality. For the past 3 years, she has received over 30,000 hateful and threatening comments on YouTube, and thousands of death and rape threats, and other abusive messages on her blog and Facebook. For the past 3 years, she has lived in nonstop fear for her safety and life, and despite all of this, law enforcement has done nothing. The campaign surpassed its goal, raising $3,000. It's unclear if anything was done afterward, given the employee was swiftly fired. The threats of litigation received media coverage, where she affirmed having no regret about that fateful day. I am concerned the more people who see it, the more people can harass me and recognize me in public, and do something similar to what this LCBO guy did. The problem with this kind of harassment is you don't know what they look like, you don't know where they live, or how far they are willing to go. Following this, recognition of her actual identity fell to the wayside, as most came to only know her as the Red SJW. Big Red's Tumblr remained surprisingly active for years, being covered in 2019 by YouTuber Nate Talks to You. His coverage of her past led Binks to threaten legal action. Fuck you, Nate, you know I have a lawyer, right? Okay, stalker. The STFU Everything account existed until early 2024, when it was quietly deactivated. Her last known posts were about the pandemic and a controversy where she denied being transphobic. While Big Red's face is known across the web, much like the original video, it seems few ever heard her actual words at length. Instead, Chanty became the first in a long list of faces and names that came to broadly represent the social justice movement of the 2010s. Hey guys, before I get any further into this video, I want to give a shout out to my sponsor, Trainwell. For me, I had to spend years at the gym and watching YouTube videos with trial and error to figure out how to get in good shape. But this is an app and a service with a personal trainer that does all of the heavy lifting for you. Trainwell combines the personalization and accountability of a human expert with the flexibility of technology. So how it works is once you sign on, you will get a real-life personal trainer that you will talk to face-to-face on a regular basis. From there, you will tell them if you have access to a gym or are just working out of your house, and they will give you customized workout routines to allow you to achieve said goals. This is so valuable for two reasons. As I mentioned first, you are going to be held accountable because this person is going to make sure you're following through. And secondly, you don't have to figure out for yourself what is a good routine. These are experts that will give you exactly what you need to do so you could build muscle, lose weight, or both. And this app will give you customized routines that you could bring to the gym with you that will show you exactly how to do the workout. If you're a person that wants to get into better shape, I highly recommend trying out the service. And if you click the link in the description down below, you get a 14-day free trial. Yes, the free trial includes a personal trainer, and if you don't like it, there is no commitment. But I truly believe if you just need a bit of a push in the right direction, Trainwell is the app for you. One of the hallmarks of the stereotypical feminist is the idea of getting triggered. The phrase originates from the trigger warnings meant to accommodate those with specific needs like PTSD. Think of your grandfather that served in Vietnam or running inside when fireworks go off. But in the 2010s, this was broadened in colloquial use to include any potential trigger, no matter how frivolous. Think of those rage bait videos you'd see on Fox News where they cover an event where they make everyone do jazz hands instead of clapping.
I just want to say, can we please keep the chatter to a minimum? I'm one of the people who's very, very prone to sensory overload. There's a lot of whispering and chatter going on. It's making it very difficult for me to focus.
While the exact origin of this more flippant usage is hard to trace, its virality can be linked to one specific image. Now, you may think this is a close-up of a random woman's face, but it's not that simple. It's actually a crazy rabbit hole that requires a lot of context to fully understand. So please hang with me. Melody Hensley is an activist known for her work in Washington, D.C. That includes serving as the Center for Inquiry's executive director, a nonprofit against religion and politics. It was well-earned, coming after a decade of advocacy. Melody was able to help them reach new demographics and frequently sold out fundraisers. She even testified on the organization's behalf to the city government in 2010. But the accomplishment that defined her tenure didn't occur until a year later. You see, Melody was also a feminist, and much of her work examined its relation to atheism. This led her to suggest an event to the CFI, which became a conference called Women in Secularism. It was an effort to be socially conscious, right as this sort of dialogue was facing increasing backlash online. As I briefly mentioned in the Big Red segment, the late 2000s saw the rise of YouTubers devoted to combating religion. They prided themselves on using facts and logic to debunk ideas like creationism. What no one realized was this would unintentionally lay the groundwork for the eventual wave of anti-SJWs. The summer of 2011 began with ElevatorGate, which many consider the turning point for online skepticism. It started with a video by Rebecca Watson, also known as the Skeptic. Her vlog centered around events at the 2011 World Atheist Convention. However, it also had a section about conference creeps with a story that took place on an elevator.
So I walked to the elevator, and a man got on the elevator with me and said, "Don't take this the wrong way, but I find you very interesting, and I would like to talk more. Would you like to come to my hotel room for coffee?" Just a word to the wise here, guys, don't do that.
While most were supportive, some argued that she was overreacting. This didn't become a wider scandal until Rebecca spoke at the CFI Student Leadership Conference. While discussing the religious right, she recounted the elevator story before putting negative comments on display.
I thought it was fairly clear. However, there were some interesting responses like this. This person writes, "I can't believe that someone, gasp, would talk with you on an elevator. How dare a man talk with you alone?"
Among her critics was a student named Steph McGraw, a member of Unify who wrote about Rebecca on their blog. Rebecca saw this and decided to call out Steph by name, on stage, in front of her peers.
There's another comment I found on a blog from actually one of your own. And I wanted to use it as an example, not to embarrass this person, but to point out that we have a serious problem when young women are this ignorant about feminism.
It was humiliating, which the student expressed in a subsequent post. I didn't think she would choose to address it during her keynote, let alone place it in a category with people advocating for her to be raped. All I could do was just sit there and watch myself being berated for supposedly espousing anti-women views, and told that I wouldn't stand up for women in sticky situations with men, as 100 of my peers watched on. The result was a full-on civil war, as prominent atheists publicly took a side. The breaking point was when evolutionary biologist Richard Dawkins, who might I add also invented the term meme, weighed in. He accused Rebecca of overreacting in a comment letter headed, "Dear Muslima." It compared her experience to that of a woman living under fundamentalist Islam. This was covered in a number of major news outlets, doing irreparable damage to his public image. That's when YouTubers like Thunderfoot and The Amazing Atheist took a side. They mobilized against her, and Rebecca's original vlog amassed 18,000 dislikes. This scandal was a sign of things to come, the first of many that slowly eroded the skeptic community. Melody created her Twitter that year, shortly before joining the Secular Women Advisory Committee. This put her right in the center of the ever-growing war between atheism and feminism. The latter had an alliance with a group of writers called Freethought Blogs. It was started by P.Z. Myers, an American biologist. Their contributors all sided with Rebecca and felt convention creepers were a serious issue. They pushed for stronger policies while reiterating the severity. These campaigns were often dogmatic or even flat-out dishonest. For example, spreading false rumors that a famous attendee sneakily took upskirt photos. Thunderfoot criticized this shortly after joining Freethought Blogs, resulting in P.Z. Myers severing ties.
Put simply, the environment is widely being unrealistically portrayed as more hostile than it actually is. If your goal is to encourage women to attend such events, highlighting troll comments as representative of the conduct at such conferences is both willfully reckless and counterproductive to such a cause.
Tensions grew as situations like this unfolded more and more often. They seemed to culminate with a video by Thunderfoot titled, "Why Feminism is Poisoning Atheism."
Where you have people like Melody Hensley, that's the executive director of the Center for Inquiry DC, going creationist style, ban happy on people who haven't even mentioned her name yet, because they might say something bad about her someday, and starting flagging campaigns against videos critical of her. Oh, and would you believe it, she labels herself as a feminist too.
Melody preemptively blocked anyone that followed at ElevatorGate on Twitter. It felt hypocritical, especially as she began lashing out at her own supporters. What they didn't realize is just how deeply this was affecting her well-being. The harassment got so severe that, apparently, it led her to develop a post-traumatic stress disorder. Melody first referenced this diagnosis in the summer of 2013. "Stressed out about leaving my house tomorrow by myself and going to an unfamiliar place. Hashtag PTSD. I've been told that my harassers are saying cruel things about me coming out with PTSD. They want to shame and silence me. Not going to happen." This stayed relatively obscure until an article by the Daily Dot. They discussed at ElevatorGate and how it tracked everyone involved. The owner used a site called Storify to archive tweets, which always notified subjects. This entailed over 6,700 articles in a single year. 5 women were interviewed, including Rebecca and Melody. Melody alleged to have suffered the worst, reiterating she experienced severe trauma from online harassment. Her purported diagnosis became a reoccurring joke among critics. So much so, Melody addressed the subject again in April of 2014. "I will not be silenced about the seriousness of online harassment and cyberstalking. I have PTSD and it's changed my life forever. I'm taking control by speaking out and not allowing you to silence me. This week has been tough. There has been a campaign against me. I'm blocking dozens of accounts of people telling me I don't have PTSD and threats." The last tweet caught the attention of a woman named Nikki, who was a veteran and claimed to have been deployed. She had choice words, calling Melody pathetic and mocking her weight. "Real feminists aren't so pathetic that they get the vapors because someone was mean to them on the internet. You're embarrassing." This enraged the activist. military/ex-military combat folks. There are groups that have higher statistics of PTSD than you. You need to educate yourself. It didn't end there, as Melody then reported Nikki to her higher-ups. If you are in the military and you are harassing me about my PTSD, expect that I will be speaking to your commanding officer. I get it every day. I have decided I'm contacting commanding officers, as I just did. For a person who suffered severely from online harassment, she certainly did herself no favors with these comments. In response to many of her defenders even raising eyebrows at these tweets, Melody then pointed to victims of sexual assault to justify her previous statements. Read the story about a woman who was raped and harassed because PTSD is only for soldiers. Women that have been raped and foster care alumni statistically have higher cases of PTSD than war vets. PTSD is not a war veteran's disorder. No one was buying it. Oh, I'm sorry, were you raped? PTSD is caused by extreme trauma. Twitter doesn't come anywhere near that. Nobody is claiming it is. You, however, obnoxiously make the claim you have it by spending time on Twitter having been trolled. And that really does sum up this issue, doesn't it? How does a person with PTSD from Twitter still remain on Twitter? The ordeal was covered by Thunderfoot the next day. Melody doubled down, calling it harassment before elaborating on her condition. I've had PTSD for 16 months. The first 6 months were hell. I'm still mostly bedridden. I'm in intense therapy and physical therapy for being bedridden. I took 2 months off of work and now have to work from home from my bed. All of this can be verified through my work that received letters from my psychiatrist. On April 17th, 2014, the Daily Mail published an article about her claims. It was far more critical than previous coverage, showing tweets from both sides. They noted Melody turned down an interview, as she was, quote, not well enough to answer questions. This launched the story into the mainstream, as the mere thought of a Twitter-induced PTSD episode brought widespread ridicule. The most influential part was the editorial decision to use this photo of her. Her blank expression under stark dramatic lighting felt perfect. It was so memorable that Melody became the triggered feminist. Her face was cropped and paired alongside text that mockingly read, "Triggered." This edit in particular spread like wildfire, overshadowing all of the drama that preceded it. It became a staple across social media, including YouTube, where it was popularized by Ethan Klein of H3H3 Productions.
And they're saying them directly to you, that's a whole other level of harassment, really.
Melody remained active for some time, first attempting to reclaim the SJW label. In 2015, she was one of many that was given the Secular Woman Award. However, by the end of the year, she left the Center for Inquiry, as well as social media entirely. To this day, a handful still insists she could have developed PTSD. But any evidence supporting this has yet to be seen. If true, one can only imagine what becoming a meme would have on her condition. So it was ultimately a good thing she disconnected. The next story we'll be discussing is that of Melissa Click, or better known as the Let's Get Some Muscle Lady, whose freakout was propelled to prominence in the cultural fight against college campuses. But little did I know I would fall down yet another rabbit hole to discover the context of her infamous freakout. I swear I didn't expect the video to be this long. In late 2015, a series of demonstrations at the University of Missouri demanded their system president step down. It came amidst an already tumultuous period of time. The year prior saw nationwide outrage after the shooting of 18-year-old Michael Brown. With the campus mere hours away from Ferguson, dozens of students came to protest. They carried this attitude back on campus with the creation of MU for Michael Brown and Concerned Student 1950. Despite their efforts and the protest's local relevance, the university declined to make an official statement. This upset many of the activists, including graduate student Jonathan Butler. He said to the Post, "It just shows that there are racially motivated things, murders, assaults, other things, that happen and we are just going to sweep them under the rug." That fall, a string of incidents led to the conflict heightening. It all started on September 12th, when student body president Peyton Head claimed to have been called slurs. This led many students to come forward with their own experiences. The startling image led university leader R. Bowen Lofton to respond. He was criticized for speaking around the issue, using phrases like acts of bias. They organized a rally proclaiming the school didn't care about black people. This was seemingly validated a week later. On October 5th, a second incident was reported by the Legion of Black Collegians. As the story goes, while rehearsing for a play, they were interrupted by a drunk who called them the N-word. The perpetrator was immediately identified and moved from campus. Even still, many felt administrators weren't doing enough to protect students from racism. They aimed their sights on System President Tim Wolf for the 10th of October. That day, members of Concerned Student 1950 formed a protest at the homecoming parade. Butler, along with 10 others, surrounded Wolf's red convertible. They shouted at him and his wife through the megaphone. The driver simply revved his engine as the couple stayed in their seats. Butler later claimed that the vehicle went back and forth, bumping one of them twice. The protesters were berated by drunk bystanders before Columbia police pushed them away. On October 21st, the Legion issued a list of demands. They ordered a handwritten letter from Wolf apologizing for his gross negligence and acknowledging his white privilege. They also accused him of hitting a protester with his car. They demanded him to read the letter out loud at a press conference before stepping down. But I'm not sure why he would follow their other requests if he had to resign anyway. Back to the story. The group then called for a 10% increase in black faculty members as part of a strategic 10-year plan to promote a safe and inclusive campus. Now, it's worth mentioning, several of these protesters were part of the school's football team, the Missouri Tigers. That's important context to understanding what happened next. 3 days later, a swastika made of feces was found in the residence hall bathroom. This set Butler over the edge, declaring a self-imposed hunger strike until Wolf stepped down. "My body feels like it's on fire. I have pain all over. I'm exhausted. Of course, I'm hungry. I've got an ongoing headache." This was a media sensation, with a petition for the system president's removal receiving 7,000 signatures. Wolf tried to arrange a meeting with Butler, but the student refused. "I don't think Tim Wolf is worth my life. But I do believe that when it comes to fighting for justice, you have to be willing to have a level of sacrifice." On November 6th, footage surfaced of Wolf addressing students. He was quoted stating, "Systematic oppression is because you don't believe that you have the equal opportunity for success." It seemed like the university would remain firm in their stance. That is until the next day, when MU's football team took a stand. They announced their athletes of color would no longer play until Wolf's removal from office. MU's head football coach tweeted support for the players and received 15,000 retweets. The move is said to have changed college football forever, receiving national media attention. And while the greater community didn't mind a student starving himself to death, they sure did not want their college football messed with. Within days, Tim Wolf announced his resignation in favor of a research role at the university. There was great fanfare as students and even staff wept and hugged. They successfully had their demand met. Kendrick Lamar's "All Right" blasted from speakers as they danced along. The protesters won, but not without repercussions. This coverage brought a lot of negative attention as not everyone took their side. Many pointed out the hypocrisy of the Mizzou football team's involvement. As it turns out, earlier that year, an investigation found that the Missouri Tigers had the second highest number of players involved in sexual assaults. These boys want the freedom to sexually assault you while not wanting to deal with the microaggressions. This was only the beginning. Once the protests received national attention, many reporters descended onto the campus. That's when they discovered the activists' previously unreported encampment. The tent city was meant to serve as a safe space with signs stating "no media allowed." It had no legal bearing given they set up in the middle of a public First Amendment protected area. This caught the attention of Tim Tai, a photojournalism student on a freelance assignment for ESPN. He took photos of the village, only to get harassed and physically confronted by students and MU staff. The altercation was filmed and uploaded to YouTube, where it received 3 million views. Most notorious was a clip at the very end when he approached assistant professor Melissa Click.
"Hi, media, can I talk to you?"
"No, you need to get out. Well, you need to get out."
"No, I don't."
"You need to get out."
"I actually don't."
"All right. Hey, who wants to help
This upload was enough to alter the conversation entirely, as critics pointed out their willingness to invade others' privacy and space. It quickly overtook the original controversy as the public at large stood with the journalist. Melissa was derided across the internet, with her words quoted in headline after headline. Afterward, concerned student 1950 passed out flyers calling the confrontation a teachable moment. They also removed signs warning media to stay away. But this did little to quell the backlash. In January of 2016, a letter was signed by more than 100 lawmakers calling for her firing. Then over 100 faculty members signed a letter in her defense. This was undermined on January 25th, when Melissa was charged with misdemeanor assault. She accepted community service in exchange for dismissal of the charges. It took another month, but eventually she was fired by the university. Melissa refused to accept this, claiming it had been done without due process and the board overstepped their authority. When conservatives looked into who she was, they found her research focused on pop culture, with many of them questioning what was even being taught at this supposed place of education. The icing on the cake was that Melissa had previously written a thesis about Twilight fangirls and the gendered politics of fandom. She published a book on the same subject, with one review claiming it was being used as a textbook. This just fed into the culture war aspect of the story as more people began to dogpile. While the woman disavowed her actions, she insisted to have done good that day and claimed it didn't represent her character. In the end, the ordeal didn't seem to have a lasting effect, as that September she was hired by another university. It was met with brief controversy, with a number of the students of this new school protesting the decision. But that quickly subsided, as she remains with the school to this day. On June 16, 2015, Donald Trump formally announced his bid for the 2016 presidential election. The news was picked up by virtually all major outlets, generating the highest volume of searches for any presidential candidate to date. This continued throughout his campaign, which quickly dominated the media. His rallies were spectacles, drawing both fervent supporters and vehement critics. Tensions ran high as clashes grew increasingly common. And that was exactly the case on March 11, 2016, when his rally in St. Louis, Missouri descended into chaos. Fierce protests erupted, resulting in the arrest of 32 people. Footage of the mayhem was uploaded hours later by prominent conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. It shows a confrontation between protesters and a local radio host named Owen Schroyer. While demonstrators tried to argue against Trump's rhetoric, they were ineffective and came off very poorly.
I am a fucking punk.
Leading the charge was a man later nicknamed Aid Skrillex for his resemblance to the then popular dubstep artist.
You've never experienced oppression in your entire fucking life. Neither have
you
I.
Don't know me.
You're a white male.
So?
You're a white man.
He also insulted an older gentleman's age, which led to this interaction. Many felt that this perfectly encapsulated the type of back and forth you'd see online. There was even a person in the background wearing an anonymous mask. The next day, a significantly edited down version was uploaded titled Internet IRL. It primarily highlights Skrillex, though another face appeared to compare Trump to Hitler.
What have you done to benefit this planet?
Does Trump not remind you of that?
No, explain to me how Trump is like Hitler.
Mass deportation.
For his contribution, he was given the nickname Carl the Cuck. The footage went viral, amassing 600,000 views within a week. Skrillex shouting, "You're a white male," spread across the net. The clip was posted on Our Videos, receiving 14,000 upvotes and largely bipartisan mockery. Good of all these people to remind us there are always idiots supporting every cause. there was an equal disdain for Carl, who became a popular image macro. One of the top comments lists the user's favorites, with several different caricatures deriding his opinions and calling him a cuck. They were sourced from 4chan's politically incorrect board, who invented the nicknames. Surprisingly, these two men have never been identified, which may have been for the best. Aid Skrillex and Carl the Cuck became so well known, the original video was renamed to include them in the title. By then, the upload had well over 1.8 million views, and the comments rallied behind Owen Schroyer, who was hired as a field reporter for InfoWars after the clip's popularity. He's worked there ever since, becoming Alex's right-hand man, hosting a show called The War Room. In 2018, Schroyer was named in a lawsuit against InfoWars from the families of Sandy Hook. He personally defamed one of the plaintiffs by claiming the grieving father lied about holding the son's body. The families were awarded $4.1 million in compensation, and an additional $45.2 million in punitive damages. A year later, Owen pled guilty to illegally entering a restricted area near the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. He was sentenced to 60 days in jail on September 12, 2023. And it's crazy that this all started because he got in an argument with two men named Aid Skrillex and Carl the Cuck all the way back in 2015. In 2016, ABC published an article about a closed Facebook group called Girls Night In. It was a secretive online community for women in the Los Angeles area. It was incredibly selective, with applicants requiring approval from all 2,000 members. They ranged from executives to actresses and models. Upon entry, they were allowed access into an exclusive club in LA, as well as weekly meetups at the Roosevelt Hotel. The group was founded by 32-year-old Annalise Nielsen, who likened it to an online sorority. Nielsen had a long, interesting career, starting the alt-porn site God's Girls in 2006. In 2014, she launched a friend-finding app called Crushy. Her latest project was an attempt at a female hive mind she felt might be the future of friendship. They later expanded to have a branch in New York called Girl Cult. While the inner workings were largely kept private, that didn't stop them from making several public stands. Most notable was the response to the Brock Turner verdict. Girl Cult organized events in four cities calling for the judge on the case to be unseated. With the media connections to make a difference, the group slowly grew in notoriety. But this was undermined once their founder made headlines a month later. This story really begins on March 12, 2016, when Annalise posted a tweet accusing her previous rideshare driver of racism. "Just had a racist Lyft driver kick me out of his car on the side of the freeway. What a time to be alive." She didn't elaborate, so it was forgotten. That changed in late August when an anonymous source sent a recording of the night in question to Canadian right-wing YouTuber Lauren Southern.
"So I'm just sitting here enjoying my Saturday afternoon, and I get an email from an anonymous source containing a video file and a link to an ABC news article."
The 5-minute video shows Annalise berating the driver for having a Hawaiian bobblehead figure on his dashboard. Lauren played the footage in full, which surfaced on its own the next day. It begins with the feminist confidently asserting that Hawaii was a continent, before claiming to take offense.
"You thought that was adorable. You didn't think about like the pillaging of the like continent of Hawaii."
I didn't even know there was pillaging.
"Oh, you didn't?
No.
Okay, so you won't get rid of the doll then? Because that was like a really cute thing that you found at Goodwill."
The driver declined to take it down, which led her to assume he was a white male.
"You want me to take down some of that?
Yeah, no, I do want you to, because it's actually deeply offensive. No, I do want you to take it down."
"That's
okay. You're going to be on Gawker."
"I'm on Gawker."
"No, on, you will be published on Gawker."
"Thank you."
"And you'll be like the next internet meme. It's going to be super funny."
He still didn't back down, reiterating it wasn't offensive and pointing out he himself was Asian. The driver then revealed he couldn't take it off even if he wanted to because it was super glued to the dashboard, before stating she was his first bad experience with Lyft. The feminist eagerly replied she was recording the entire incident.
That's fine. I've been video recording the entire time. I'm excited.
That's cool, and I'm being respectful to you.
No, you're not. You have been actually very rude and extremely entitled.
Eventually, she got out of his car to try to get his license plate.
Okay. About how I won't leave your car.
I wish you would.
Can you please exit?
No, I can't, but you can give me your first and last name. Here, here's what I'll do instead. Holy shit. The weirdest night of my entire life. And he could not get away fast enough so that I couldn't get this license plate number. How cute.
Despite her threats, Annalise never shared the footage publicly. It's unclear how exactly Lauren's source obtained the video, but regardless, her coverage garnered 1.1 million views, with video of the confrontation quickly spreading across the internet. It reached the front page of Our Rage and Our Videos. Annalise deleted her Twitter the next day, which was replaced by a Trump-themed impersonator. She responded to the outrage at length on Facebook, complaining about Gamergate and the alt-right. Even in light of the footage, she called the ride sketchy and compared his bobblehead to a blackface mammy. Everyone already knows that I'm an annoying monster who will talk about annoying shit all day. Who cares? Nothing about me doing this is shocking, really. But it was not my most eloquent moment. I was drunk and furious. Naturally, a barrage of weird harassment from strange men has been unleashed upon me. Across many accounts on various platforms, I've received a bunch of nonsense ranging from usual "fuck you, SJW" to other more intense and threatening stuff. This has been a fun week. If you share an account or page of some kind with me and are subjected to this nonsense, do me a favor and just delete it and ignore them. They will tire themselves out. After this, Lauren tweeted that she had gotten contact with the driver. It turns out her report did in fact get him fired, until Annalise sent the video to Lyft a few days later. It was exonerating enough to have him reinstated. While the story never made it to Gawker, the outrage was covered by sites like the Daily Dot and the Daily Mail. However, these paled in comparison to the video by H3H3 Productions, which currently sits at over 8.8 million views.
You're gonna be on Gawker.
Annalise was turned into a full-fledged meme, the very thing she had threatened to do to the Lyft driver. She ignored the backlash after this, deciding to focus on Girl Cult instead. Her organization remained active for the next 4 years until it came to an abrupt end in 2020. On June 1st, Annalise posted a story asking for people to donate in order to pay her bills and buy new protest sneakers. This received a ton of backlash, as she was soliciting donation amidst the George Floyd protests. In response, Annalise claimed she had redistributed the money to causes related to Black Lives Matter. However, this was quickly proven to be a lie as more and more people grew disillusioned and confronted her. When asked for receipts, she said she had to get on a conference call, despite just saying she had no work because of COVID. When she finally posted the receipts about 3 hours later, they were all timestamped just 5 minutes before. That's 3 hours after she had said she'd been distributing the money. All of the outgoing payments were Black women in a group who had charged her after the post went up. Again, nothing that showed she had been redistributing the money prior to being called out in the group. The backlash became enough that Annalise would end up deactivating the account entirely, with the organization seeming to collapse. The next day, a thread on Facebook was posted by a former roommate who lived with her for a year. Tyler explained that in 2018, he had moved into a vacant bedroom in her home. They split the bill with another roommate named Zach. Tyler and Zach were expected to cover utilities, paying her whenever they were asked. Despite this, a year later, their water and electricity were turned off due to a non-payment of an amount in the thousands. Annalise blamed her roommates, claiming they hadn't given her money for the water bill in over a year. That was before asking for an additional $900 each. Tyler quietly made plans to leave, and eventually gave her his 30 days notice. A couple days later, I had finally found a different living situation and sat her down and gave her 30 days notice. I had just paid rent because it was the beginning of the month. For the next couple days, I would leave the house to go to work and she would scream at me as I left and call me names. Then on June 10th, 2019, Tyler came home to find she had changed the locks. Given she wasn't the landlord, this was illegal, so he called the police to regain access. When the police arrived, she came outside and pretended to accidentally lock herself out of the house. I called our roommate and luckily he was on his way home, so we waited and he let us in. I was escorted into the house by two officers and a friend I brought along as a witness. I was able to retrieve all of my belongings and that was the last time we had any sort of communication. Tyler explains that after this, Anna went back to her private Facebook group to accuse him of robbing her. This led many people he cared about at the time to cut him off entirely. He chose to remain silent because he, quote, knew what she was capable of. For years that I lived in that house, I had to listen to her brag about her affair with Dave Grohl and the countless times she committed insurance fraud at her mechanic shop. I had to watch her abuse her dogs, and I had to constantly avoid stepping in piles of dog shit and piss that she let sit on the floor for days. I had to listen to her call me and my friends fags like she was one of us. He ended the post by declaring he had receipts for everything. Annalise Nielsen is a thief and a liar and profits off of the hardships of people, even people she is close to. Please delete me if you are still associated with her in any way. The post received hundreds of comments from those with their own experiences, with some dating all the way back to her adult site. Those would end up being the most disturbing. Your post about Annalise was very eye-opening. Back in the day, she was profiting off of taking advantage of very young girls with her alt porn site, godsgirls.com. She scouted underage girls on MySpace, myself included, and promised us so much money and fame, which wound up being a measly $60 for us to submit DIY sets we take ourselves and have our naked bodies online forever. While this user remained anonymous, shortly after a post began circulating with some proof. The article explains that from February of 2007 to April of 2008, hundreds of erotic photos of a 17-year-old were hosted on her site. This individual went on to become a somewhat notable singer. When questioned, Annalise denied knowing who she was, but given the broader accusations against her, it's hard to take this at face value. In light of all this, Annalise attempted to defend herself by once again painting her critics as alt-right, sexist, and racist. In March of 2016, a video began circulating from San Francisco State University. It purportedly showed a campus employee harassing a white student for wearing dreadlocks, as they deemed that cultural appropriation.
You're saying that I can't have a hairstyle because of your culture?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's my culture. Do you know what dreadlocks mean?
Do you know why it was in Egyptian culture? Are you Egyptian? Nah, but I'm not.
Are you Egyptian?
Hey, no.
Are you Egyptian?
No, but it doesn't matter.
Wait, where's Egypt? Tell me.
You know what, girl?
Where's Egypt?
Dude, go. You have no right to tell me what I can wear. Huh?
Where's Egypt?
Egypt. Yo, girl, stop touching me right now.
Yo, girl, stop touching me right now.
Come back. Get off of me. I don't need your disrespect.
Why are you filming this?
Just for everyone's safety.
The footage was uploaded to YouTube where it garnered 4.5 million views. It spread across various subreddits with each post receiving thousands of comments. The man was identified as a 22-year-old and named Corey Goldstein. The public overwhelmingly took his side, with most astonished at her behavior. SFSU issued a statement claiming they'd be investigating the matter. They disputed the notion anyone involved was an employee. They also acknowledged police were called to the scene, but no charges were laid. The next day, a student news site, Golden Gate Express, posted an interview with Goldstein. He explained several events that preceded the video. The woman was not an employee, but a student activist named Bonita Tyndall. The woman was handing out flyers and turned him away. "Sorry, we don't want people with your hair here." "That's rude," he remarked, before walking away. This led her to follow him down two flights of stairs to confront him.
She kept grabbing me, pushing me back, trying to make her point or something. I didn't want to talk or discuss the situation with her at all. I felt that I didn't need to explain myself, my hair, my rules, my body. It is something that naturally will happen.
Does that happen naturally to your hair?
No. I'm not saying that it did, but at the same time, it's something that I wanted it to happen. Like, it does naturally happen to other people. Their hair will naturally dredge. So those people that naturally dredge, is it okay that they have it?
Later that day, CBS Local posted their own interview. It revealed police approached Goldstein about pressing charges. They alleged it may have constituted battery and even a hate crime. He ultimately decided against taking action, preferring the matter be handled by the university. Goldstein later stated, "If I got a formal apology with her real intentions, I would forget about the whole situation." Although it received widespread media coverage, Tyndall had yet to speak out publicly. They were able to interview one of her roommates who seemed unfazed. "It's been going on for a while, her passion and social justice, and black power and everything." By then, Tyndall had left the residence. While the victim seemed willing to move on, not everyone was so forgiving. A petition was started by the public calling for her removal from campus. They labeled Tyndall a violent, dangerous bully who wouldn't be tolerated if she were white. The page received over 10,000 signatures, but it fell on deaf ears. Tyndall broke her silence on April 11th, declaring it all a racist and misogynist vendetta. She claimed the video framed her as a stereotypical angry black woman. In addition to doubling down, she alleged he called her a bitch before the video began. This was corroborated by a supposed witness named Maddie Gray. While passing out flyers in Malcolm X Plaza, I saw a white male approaching with dreads. Triggered, I unconsciously moved my arms holding the flyer further. He does not approach me to receive a flyer and continues on to his destination. Attempting to react to what triggered me, I jokingly say in a quiet voice, not with that hair, in the opposite direction of him. He then verbally assaults me. He called me a bitch. As a black woman, verbal assault by men comes easily as women are dehumanized, objectified, and over-sexualized by them. This was followed by a statement from the Black Student Union supporting the activist. They condemned SF State and the media for endangering her life. This misrepresentation has led to racist, homophobic, and misogynistic slurs being directed at members of our organization. Why did a disagreement between two individuals become an incident to which the black community must answer for? Goldstein flatly denied her accusation that he called her a bitch, but was desperate to find middle ground. I want to apologize to the girl in the video because no one deserves the amount of backlash she received. I want her to know that I feel where she was coming from and wish we could have talked in a more positive and loving situation. So to get this straight, Corey was assaulted on video, the college did nothing about it, the woman that assaulted him then defamed him, which led to him issuing an apology to her. No action was taken against Tyndall, who was allowed to remain on campus. Strangely, the argument that started it all persists on to this very day, with the video frequently reposted sparking debate over who can wear certain hairstyles. The most notable example of this is when a woman was berated for wearing a black hairstyle in the video game Animal Crossing. In 2016, a group of Republican students from the University of Massachusetts Amherst held an event called The Triggering. They invited an all-star cast of anti-SJWs, including Christina Hoff Summers, Steven Crowder, and senior editor of Breitbart, Milo Yiannopoulos, to discuss political correctness. Milo was in the midst of a nationwide tour which spawned protests in colleges around the country. The constant cycle of outrage helped propel him to the mainstream. Such was the case at the Beau Kerr Auditorium on April 25, 2016. The panel opened with remarks from each speaker, followed by a 30-minute discussion. Almost immediately, a small group of hecklers began to express outrage.
We have organized tonight's event to explore one single question. Has political correctness on college campuses gone too far?
No!
This continued throughout the entire hour and a half-long panel. It was counterproductive, with several shouting matches in the audience.
And if you don't believe me, it's on camera. He was...
Wait, hold on. Did she just change your mind?
What?
Did she just change your mind? I think I felt a shift because she yelled shit out.
No.
You're triggering another dog!
Crowder took it upon himself to single out the hecklers to thunderous applause.
All right, we get it, we get it. You're angry. Daddy never hugged you enough. Come on. Let me give you an example right here, okay? Right now. This girl right here just yelled out that we were all racist.
He cited them as a real-life example for why the panel needed to exist.
This monster right here that you're so afraid of, the face you see in your nightmares, was created by social justice warrior assholes like you. So you know what, at this point, just keep the cameras running. These people don't want to hear any differing opinions. That's what political correctness is. You want to know what political correctness is? Look around and listen. These people don't have arguments. They just yell out racist, and they call the gay guy here who has a fetish for black dudes a racist homophobe.
Despite the chaos, most of their supporters left satisfied. It was entertaining and a chance to rally around a common enemy. While the event was streamed live, one thing missing was a closer look at the individual hecklers. Of particular note was a woman who kept shouting over Summers, eventually being asked to leave.
Future generations will look back. Shh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Three strikes, you're out, darling.
One more disruption and we'd have to ask you to leave the venue.
Well, also in attendance was Campus Reform, a conservative site funded by the Leadership Institute. It was published alongside a video with previously unseen footage that showed the heckler up close.
Revision. We apologize.
Calm down, young lady.
One more disruption and we'd have to ask you to leave the venue.
The result was thousands of videos, edits, and memes, including an official dance remix by Steven Crowder. She was given the nickname Trigglypuff in reference to the stubby, rotund Pokemon. The name grew so popular that Campus Reform changed their title of the video to reflect her popularity, just as was the case with Carl the Cucks and Aid Skrillex. Within 48 hours, it garnered 700,000 views, even being covered on Fox News.
I see a future in customer service for her.
Yeah.
Charming. Now, it's easy to mock her, but she's a victim of a cult-like indoctrination by the new campus religion of safe spaces. She's so brainwashed, she claims blocking speech is actually a version of free speech.
It was around this time that you truly saw the mainstream right wing of America adopt this 4chan-founded anti-SJW movement. Today, the original Trigglypuff video sits at 3.4 million views. And that doesn't include the countless re-uploads on places such as TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. And this doesn't even include the other angle of the event, uploaded by a different student, which has an additional 1.5 million views. In response, a New York Magazine article was written about the virality of the moment. The journalist argued she was simply a young person overcome with emotion, and that anyone her age could relate. She is in for weeks or more of harassment for the crime of being a young college student who got upset during an era of ubiquitous cameras and social media's inexhaustible appetite for people to ridicule. While people didn't want to hear it at the time because they thought it was so funny to mock these people, he really wasn't wrong. For what it's worth, Trigglypuff's real name was never found, with her identity remaining unknown to this day. The closest was an alleged dating profile on the site OkCupid. Milo shared it with the caption, "If you show up to one of my events and make a spectacle out of yourself, chances are someone will know who you are." Even with her anonymity, Trigly still remains one of the most mocked social justice warriors of the era, with GIFs of her meltdown still being used to this very day. With how many of these memes belittled the person's appearance, it's important to state that the virality of social justice warriors usually relied on assumptions. Most of these stories we discussed so far were forgotten as the individuals were merely turned into walking stereotypes. No example epitomizes this more than a woman simply called Triggered Feminist. The story began with a video posted by Alex Jones on June 1st, 2016. It showed a squabble between Trump supporters and protesters in Sacramento, California. Around the 2-minute mark, two men from opposing sides argue about the migrant crisis in Europe. The Trump supporter argues that there was an increase in crime due to the rising Muslim population.
Why should Sweden have to change its ideas of making a female-only swimming pool to accommodate to another people?
You're accommodating for something that doesn't exist.
This is when she intervened to provide her own statistics.
Do you know how many women in the U.S.
get raped? Do you know how many?
One in every three.
A
all Americans.
That's a crisis. There's a rape crisis. Exactly.
Her only contribution was actually a true citation. The figure originates from a report by the CDC in 2010. But it was easy to take her expressions out of context and paint an entirely different story. She was portrayed as an emotional, irrational, and triggered feminist. When PewDiePie made a video about microaggressions, he used her face as the thumbnail, netting 8.7 million views. This continued for years to the point Donald Trump Jr. shared an edit of her as Captain Triggered in 2019. Early on, a thread was created on 4chan trying to invent a nickname. They came up with Ficky Fiona, but it didn't stick. Over the years, many have revisited the original expecting to laugh at her insanity, only to admit that they were misled. Came here expecting to find crazy. She's actually just friendly and talkative the whole time. She totally didn't deserve to be that meme. Her expression is so quick that it's hard to get it without downloading the video and going frame by frame. Poor usage. She seems a cool person, very calm, just pointing her opinion. Triggered Girl wasn't really triggered at all. Looks can be deceiving, and the impression most got from a few images was completely wrong. This did little to change how she was perceived at large, which goes to show how little the actual story matters. To date, Fiona has never been identified, and her story remains largely obscure, even after being made into one of the many faces of crazed, irrational social justice warriors. Zarna Joshi is an activist based out of Washington State. Her work primarily focuses on racial and environmental issues. That includes giving talks on campuses and demonstrating against oil and gas pipelines. While she had some local notoriety, she wouldn't get into worldwide attention until a post on August 11th, 2016. That day, Zarna took to Facebook to claim she had been sexually harassed at a protest in the Seattle City Hall. The incident took place during a public hearing of a new police precinct. It was criticized for its high cost, being labeled the most expensive police station in the country. While standing in the lobby, she overheard a TV crew talking to someone on the other side. The man explained how cops helped his heroin-addicted daughter, declaring that girls matter. Zarna alleged this person victimized her. That same guy then sexually harassed me. And when I asked him why he was sexually harassing me, he kept doing it. When I raised my voice and told everyone what he was doing, he ran away. The security guards who witnessed everything sided against her. This led the feminist to try and file a formal complaint against them. She also spoke to police, who declined to take action. This was used as justification for their cause, stating police didn't protect her. The post ends with a call to action, as well as a recording she took of the initial incident. While it was first met with support in her small circle, those who actually watched the video found it didn't support her narrative at all.
You taking my picture?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You want my name?
Yeah, sure.
It's Humongous.
Okay. Humongous what? Humongous what?
Humongous.
Humongous what?
Humongous what?
This person just spoke to me in a sexually harassing way.
I did not.
Yeah, he did. Oh, he said, do you know what my name is?
No, and I said what?
And he said, Humongous.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. This person just sexually harassed me.
I said I'm humongous.
Yes, yeah, that's right. Humongous what?
Humongous.
So now you're actually pointing to yourself.
I'm
you're actually pointing to your body parts. And you're actually pointing to your body parts and saying that you're humongous. To say that girls matter? How dare you? How dare you, you disgusting person? All right.
Finally, security intervened.
Don't touch me! Don't touch me! Are you gonna do anything about how he sexually harassed me? Are you gonna do anything about how he sexually harassed me?
The rest of the video shows Zarna shouting in their faces, demanding some form of retribution. It spread across Blue Lives Matter groups before reaching YouTube, where it went viral. The video quickly became a popular subject for the wave of anti-SJW channels at the time. They pointed out the absurdity of her taking such great offense to what was ultimately a dad joke. Most notable was H3 Productions yet again, continuing their trend of covering crazy social justice warriors.
He's like, that's the joke. That's the whole joke. It's humongous. He's like, did she not get it? Humongous. That's the joke. I'm a dad. Look at me. I got the slick back. I've got receding hairline, guys. I'm a dad. Do you not get the memo?
The video received 7.9 million views, showing the man overwhelming support. Up until this point, he hadn't spoken out publicly. That changed 2 weeks later when Ethan managed to land an interview.
He was a great man, one who stood up for what was right and stood behind dad jokes even when the waters got dicey. That man happens to be with us here today. And what is his name?
Rudy Pantoja.
No.
Oh, humongous.
First question Ethan asks is what happened before the video.
Again, I thought she had the cute guy disorder syndrome.
Yeah, she was checking out that.
I thought she was wanting my number for a date or something, but I guess not.
When he realized what was going on, he decided not to cuss or give her his name.
You were talking about your stature, your largeness as a man.
I was talking about, you know, I'm fat. I offered her lunch. Coffee.
Zara, the girl?
Yeah, I said, hey, you want to get together?
When did that happen?
This is when it first started.
So let me get this straight. Before it went viral, after she had already yelled at you and posted on her Facebook page, you reached out to her and said, hey, let's get coffee and work this out.
And if you need to bring a friend, bring a friend. And I want to thank you and the whole community for their support. And let's not give up.
While most expected the story to end there, the activist fired back in a four-part series called Zarna Responds. The first addresses sexual violence and stalking from white supremacists and misogynists all over the world. Zarna doubles down on her claims, dismissing any and all disagreement as a consequence of the patriarchy. She then states their main complaint is that she raised her voice.
This is what patriarchy does. It causes everyone to attack the victim, the one who is most vulnerable. This protects the system of power, which is male sexual dominance.
Her next video responds to critics that were women or people of color, accusing them of internalized oppression. Zarna defends her hostility, claiming she was trying to defend herself. She then accuses Rudy of agitating the situation by repeating his joke.
So let us come together to stand against oppression. Let us come together to end rape culture.
This was a teaser for her third video about defining sexual harassment. Her points are read out by a handful of male acquaintances, which make up the bulk of the video.
If we have to use mental acrobatics to justify abusive behavior, like saying that was just a dad joke or a fat joke, that is sexual harassment.
If you wouldn't say to your daughter or mother, it's sexual harassment. There are some men who would say it to their daughter. That's called grooming. If you see that, reach out to the daughter and ask if she's okay. It is likely her father is abusive.
At the very end, they stand together to deliver one last message.
So we will bring this system down by refusing to be quiet. We will refuse to be quiet about sexual harassment, assault, rape, and violence. Together with our male allies, we will defeat this oppression.
The fourth and final part of the series is a bit more straightforward. Zarna explains that previous videos were to get viewers to notice the oppressive systems around them. With that out of the way, she could now address some of the lies being spread.
The second lie is that they said that I approached him and asked him for his name. I didn't.
It's true that in the original footage, she didn't ask his name. However, the beginning shows her filming from a distance, which he clearly notices. The series ends with an attempt to solicit donations for her safety and well-being, linking to a page on the site YouCaring. It was flooded with small donations using a similar play on words. Her videos were received negatively, with all the likes and comments being disabled. It was around this time she was also publicly thrown out of a city council meeting.
You know, I'm going to find your comments
disruptive.
And interrupt
women when they speak,
and
just
I'm
as you interrupt
you
me now.
Your comments
we
are
saw
disruptive.
How those crimes
if you don't
went up.
Stop.
We
I'm going to have you removed.
How the disgust
please have this
and
woman
contempt
removed,
that you have towards the people
please
have
her
gone
removed.
Up. We saw
I've
all
asked
of this.
This
and
is
don't
disruptive
touch me.
Personal attacks.
This led Ethan to make another video mocking her response. He wound up donating $100 under the name Humongous as a moral test to see if she'd accept it.
She took our donations and she can, I don't know why this feature exists on YouCaring, but you can hide the amount and the name. So she's like, I'll take your money. I'm just going to fucking silence you as much as I can. Name erased, message erased. Isn't that wonderful?
But the story still doesn't end there. Humongous was beloved by their community, with fans often recognizing him in public. In 2017, Rudy ran for a city council seat in Seattle. While it wasn't widespread, some did vote for him because of the name. He only netted around 5% of the votes, amounting to around 8,000 people, but I imagine it would be much higher if he was listed on the ballots as Humongous. Their last crossover was his appearance on the H3 podcast in July of 2017. While the video stayed up for years, in 2023, Ethan privated all of the uploads about the ordeal. Although no explanation was given, it was likely part of his attempt to distance himself from the SJW era. As for Zarna, well, she never went away. There have been similar displays of absurdity over the years, with most going under the radar. It doesn't appear her opinion ever changed on the matter, as she continues pushing on with her own ideas of what activism should be. In early 2016, Bill C-16 was introduced during the 42nd Canadian Parliament. It sought to expand existing discrimination and hate speech laws to protect gender-diverse individuals. While the act broadly received support, some were opposed over potential conflicts with freedom of speech. That included an unknown University of Toronto professor named Jordan Peterson. The psychologist was respected in his field, having contributed to over 100 academic papers. He uploaded select lectures to YouTube, which garnered a small but loyal audience. That changed in September with the first in a series of videos against political correctness. The upload was created to discuss C-16 and the Ontario Human Rights Commission. Peterson criticized the bill's language, arguing it was vague and dangerous. He felt the terms were subjective in nature and feared some of his lectures would now be illegal. He also worried that refusing to use someone's preferred pronouns would be prosecuted under the law. Many of his issues regarded the definition for gender identity and expression.
Insisting that I call them using gender-neutral pronouns, she, Z-H-E, or Z-H-E for you Americans, she or jure, I think it is. I'm not doing that.
He argued increasing political correctness had a negative impact already, and feared C-16 would compel speech under threat of legal consequence. This sparked backlash from student activist groups who called for his resignation. They wrote an open letter demanding an apology and the removal of his lectures from YouTube, which pretty much just proved his point. Of course, Peterson refused, and this resulted in several demonstrations protesting his remarks. The controversy drew significant media attention, attracting far-right commentator Lauren Southern. Her presence faced increasingly hostile reactions, escalating to violence on October 11th, 2016. That day, she tried to defend Peterson, only to be met with chants of shame. Then, a student threatened her before striking her microphone.
Are you experiencing oppression? Look, smile at me, bitch, what you want?
They disappeared into the crowd. Lauren then spoke to police soon after, only to be interrupted by a student wearing a bright yellow beanie. Through a wide grin, he denied seeing anything.
Officer, I didn't see anything. I didn't see anything that happened.
There's no reason.
I didn't see anything.
Lauren would end up filing criminal charges, and the footage was uploaded the next day to Rebel Media. It immediately hit the front page of Our Public Freakout and Our Rage. They compared him to Cartman and then put him into the show through memes. By then, 4chan had already named him Smugglypuff, in reference to both his appearance and the previously termed Trigglypuff. While most were already convinced, this isn't where the story ends. It quickly emerged the student committed another crime shortly after the recording. He confronted a couple named Barbara and Brian, who were labeled white supremacists. Smuggly attacked Barbara from behind before stealing her phone. They tried to chase after the thief, but were blocked by VP of University Affairs, Cassandra Williams. This can be seen in a recording where Lauren yells out, "Yellow hat!"
That bitch stole my phone. You want me to stop that?
Please, get away from me.
Not everybody.
Who stole the phone?
After a brief chase, he ran into a building and smashed her cell phone on the floor. Barber reported this to police, who later arrested the student and charged him with assault. This was described on October 23rd by Greg Renouf, who also attended the rally. The article goes on to unmask Smugly as an elected student representative named Theo Williamson. The following is an excerpt from the campus newspaper, The Strand. "I'm ashamed and disappointed that U of T would not realize the violence that Peterson's actions have caused. I love U of T and it's an incredible school, but the fact that they enabled Peterson and that he's hiding behind academia and his tenure makes me very uncomfortable." He scrutinized an incident that occurred while Theo was in high school. In December of 2015, anti-LGBT messages were spray-painted across the walls. The culprit was never caught, and Theo was featured in a story by CTV News Windsor. Greg wondered if there was more to the story, although there is no evidence to support this claim. Meanwhile, Lauren was invited back to participate in a free speech rally. Peterson was confronted for having Nazis at his protest, as the scene once again erupted in chaos.
"The presence of Nazis and white supremacists assaulting people at your protest, do you have any comment on that?"
"Yeah, I don't like Nazis."
"Then why are you...
Why were they here?"
Well, how can I answer
are there,
that?
If, are their views in alignment with yours?"
On October 20th, Vice published an article claiming trans students were being targeted by threats of violence online. It proved ineffective, with widespread video evidence showing the opposite. The same day, 1791L uploaded footage of Peterson arguing with students titled, "Dr. Jordan Peterson Gives Up Trying to Reason with SJWs." It went on to receive over 3.1 million views. Peterson capitalized on this attention, appearing on Joe Rogan and rising to international stardom. This was posted around the last known update regarding the case. The student who struck Lauren was identified as Mira Ulysses and charged with assault. The two students appeared in court on November 24, 2016. Strangely, the prosecution seemed unaware of the video's existence. "Do you have a copy of the video and victim statement?" the defense asked, to which the Crown responded saying something along the lines of, "I didn't know there was a video." Theo Williamson appeared right after Ulysses. They were dressed in a gray men's suit with a red power tie. Their lawyer had a quick interaction with the judge, and it was all over in a flash. There doesn't appear to be any updates after that point, making the outcome of these cases unclear. Looking back, many of Peterson's fears concerning C-16 proved unfounded. Many pointed out it didn't actually add a new crime to the criminal code, just a new protected class. The bill was passed in June of 2017, and so far nobody has been charged under the law, although he has been forced by the courts to undergo social media training recently due to tweets that the Canadian government found offensive. Against all odds, Donald Trump secured the presidency in 2016. His victory defied expectations and shocked many across the mainstream. For those certain he didn't stand a chance, this was nothing short of a disaster. The disbelief and frustration led to mass protests, as thousands traveled to Washington, D.C., to voice dissent during his inauguration. Among these protesters, one image stood out and quickly became iconic. That day, ITV published footage of a person screaming in anguish right after Donald Trump was sworn in.
"Donald J. Trump is now President of the United States. President Obama.
They later spoke with the protester who apologized to the world, musing about beauty and devastation.
"I am so sorry they have been to my world. I am so sorry to my world. This is not what we want.
We will face challenges.
There's so much potential.
We will get the job done.
For beauty and for devastation."
The footage went viral across social media, repeatedly amassing millions of views every time posted. This person became the face of so-called anti-Trump derangement syndrome on both real and fake news sites alike. The clip was hysterical enough to cross political lines with thousands of variations. Their face was graffitied onto a building and remixed into a death metal track. 4chan called them Luke Crywalker, drawing comparison to Star Wars and the scene where Luke learns Darth Vader is his father. This meme's virality never truly died, remaining a staple of online discourse to this very day. They've become a de facto symbol for both anti-Trump protesters and social justice warriors, frequently appearing in compilations and an endless number of conservative thumbnails. That was in spite of the fact that the protester vanished as quickly as they appeared. Their disappearance left many curious about how they felt about becoming a meme. This fueled conspiracy theories claiming they were a paid actor. Their name wasn't a secret, identified in the original article as Jessica Starr. While many opponents tried to track Jessica down, their efforts yielded nothing.
I'm curious, if anybody knows where that inauguration screamer is, please post it below.
It would take years for Jessica to feel comfortable speaking out publicly, agreeing to their first and only interview in 2021. They appeared on Freak Out and Carry On, a public radio show affiliated with NPR. Jessica was an artist, and apparently quite introverted. When they attended protests in the past, they brought a camera and kept to themselves. This time, they were asked to go by a friend. An offer Jessica initially declined.
There are so many things wrong right now. Black people being shot. That I'll go for.
The day started very early, leaving around 5 a.m. They traveled hundreds of miles, arriving when the streets were still empty. There wasn't much thought behind their attire. They were going to stay there all day and needed to bundle up.
Yeah, you really couldn't miss me. You couldn't miss me with that coat on. Turns out, that color will forever haunt me.
As the ceremony began, a deep unsettlement began to ruminate. Without the power to stop him, Jessica sat cross-legged on the floor. That's when the artist caught the attention of Martin Geisler, a reporter for ITV News. Martin saw Jessica kneeling on the ground, head in hands, and anticipated a reaction. Moments before Trump took the oath of office, he tapped his cameraman, pointed down, and said, "Film them." The energy was so overwhelming, the protesters screamed no 12 consecutive times in a row.
I felt like it was some kind of spell that I was casting. It was like, I am gonna just like push out this energy of no and be like, you don't get to do this anymore.
They opened their eyes to a sea of video cameras. Jessica was approached by ITV's producer for permission to use the footage and nonchalantly agreed. By then, they were drained and didn't realize the implication. The footage went public hours later, becoming an immediate viral sensation. It wasn't until later that they got a vague text from an acquaintance.
Do you know that, like, you're, like, online? And I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, yeah, like, your video, the video of you. And I was like, ugh, and it just made me feel sick.
The video had already been seen by over 5 million people. They hadn't even revisited it yet, only knowing her own recollection. Now their face was being smeared across the internet, appearing next to Trump on searches for inauguration. Jess recalled it feeling like a car crash. Initially, they tried to think of ways to reclaim the experience, but as they collected all the memes, this quickly proved insurmountable. The cruel and aggressive responses to the video led Jessica to erase their online presence. While a part of Jess felt guilty for not taking advantage of the situation, it was for the best. She declined every subsequent interview and was able to separate from the situation. With all that being said, there was still one thing they came to appreciate, which also happened to be the namesake that was bestowed upon them by 4chan.
There's the scene where Luke finds out that Darth Vader's his dad, and he screams no. In this, like, way, that's the way I screamed out. And I was like, that's just freaking brilliant. I mean, it's funny, right? Because it's, like, totally, like, that is so Trump. It's like Darth Vader, like, no! That cannot be my dad!
Jess also appreciated many were unable to tell their gender.
They couldn't tell my gender. And I am genderqueer. Like, I'm non-binary. And so I loved that when people were like, that person, or just even, like, thinking they were, like, being mean by being like, was it a girl? I don't know.
With how rare it is for these sorts of memes to reflect on their virality, it's a glimpse into how the overwhelming scrutiny can affect someone that never asked to be famous. The National Life Chain is an annual demonstration against abortion across North America. It's often called a visual statement of solidarity by the Christian community. The silent protest forbids participants from initiating conversation or displaying medical photos. This protocol remained when the event was scheduled on September 30th, 2018. That day, Marie-Claire Bissonnette was tasked with managing a corner in Toronto, Canada. The protests attracted a crowd of 76 people. They gathered around 2 p.m., and the first half hour went without issue. Then a man in his late 20s approached to deface their signs with markers. He was able to ruin two of them, but was shielded from the rest. This led to the vandal to start scribbling on the back of people's clothing. He snuck up on five participants, including a 10-year-old girl. After this, Marie took her cell phone out and started recording.
Today's the law.
Somebody gets raped by somebody, and they're like, I'm a 16-year-old and I can't have this baby. Think you should keep it?
It's a baby. Yeah. If someone was raped and she gave birth and she decided to kill her 3-year-old child.
I meant to get your phone.
Someone call the cops. Do not touch me. Someone call the cops.
As a fellow Life Chain participant dialed 911, he yanked a ribbon off her chest and ran away. Marie retold this story in an article for Life Sites a few days later. She wanted to press charges, but police were unable to identify the suspect. They uploaded the footage to YouTube, garnering 500,000 views in the first 24 hours. It sparked widespread efforts across social media to track down the assailant. The virality led his employer to step forward and name the kicker as 26-year-old Jordan Hunt. Jordan worked at a hair salon called Noble Studio 101. The business disavowed his actions and fired him immediately. We're four strong women here. We don't condone any kind of violence. Everyone has their own opinions and different ways of thinking, but violence is not the answer. Jordan had a profile on their sites which hinted at other creative endeavors. I am working on my book, The Hippie Swamp Witch, a guide to natural living and my very own product line. Even after its removal, the salon received thousands of angry messages, including threats and fake appointments, even though they were the ones that outed him. With the pressure mounting, the disgraced stylist turned himself in on October 6th. He was charged with 8 counts of assault and 7 counts of mischief under $5,000. That's when it was discovered this wasn't an isolated incident. The man was subsequently charged in a second investigation from months prior. They alleged on August 2nd, 2018, Jordan approached an anti-abortion rally on a bicycle. He tried to grab a protester's sign before pushing a woman into a pole before fleeing. This resulted in an additional charge of assault. The case concluded in June of 2019, with the hairdresser sentenced to 8 months of probation. He was ordered to stay 100 meters away from future pro-life rallies and $200 in restitution. Jordan read out a letter apologizing for his actions. Everyone should have the right to be without fear when they act on their beliefs. I sincerely regret that I chose such a poor way of expressing myself. However, a reporter for Rebel Media claimed he laughed while leaving the courtroom. That's the last the public ever heard of Jordan Hunt, with it being unclear what he's up to today. The video continues to appear on sites like Twitter and TikTok, where the public continues to refer to him as the Roundhouse Kicker. It was just another day when 36-year-old Ian Ferguson decided to buy some vape juice. An ardent supporter of Trump, he went out in matching attire that read, "Make America Great Again." This provoked a reaction upon his arrival to the store called Exhale City in Tucker, Georgia. While the clerk initially greeted him, after looking through their section, he was asked to leave. Instead, Ian started filming.
That was nice. I did find the item that I wanted, and the next thing he said was that he'd like me to leave.
If you do not stop recording in my store, I'm going to call the police and ask you to leave now.
Please call the... That would be awesome. That'd be awesome. We can call Fox 5 and all sorts of stuff. I would like to purchase something here.
First.
Please do call your boss because I will be calling corporate.
Go for it.
I am looking forward to releasing this video because I just want to purchase something.
He looks for reassurance from the only other customer in line, who happened to be black.
Racist?
Yeah!
Mister?
Right?
The man storms off before attempting to report the man over the phone for being a Trump supporter.
I'm not a racist.
I got a in my store, he won't leave. He's wearing some Trump bullshit, got some racist bullshit off in his head and shit. I'm not serving anyone that has to do with that He's a treasonous asshole.
I just want good health care for my kids. I don't have a problem with the color of your skin or yours. I'd like to purchase some of this naked vape juice, though, if that would be all right. All right, see, because... Okay, here's where we're at.
Leave the store.
Here's where we're at.
Leave the store.
Here's
leave
where,
the store.
Here's where
leave
we're at.
Leave the store! F***
With the situation escalating, Ian offered to leave if he was allowed to simply purchase the product.
Make contact with me one more time. I'm gonna make a deal with you. I wanna purchase that vape juice.
No!
If you sell it to me,
no!
I won't. If you sell it
Get
to
the
me.
Fuck out!
Look, if you sell it to me,
no,
I won't call the police. What you did was assaulted me. What I need is that for my wife. If you sell it to me, I won't call the cops and press charges on you for assault.
They almost came to an agreement, but as he rang up the vape juice in question, Ian stoked the flames.
God bless America. Capitalism wins again.
Your capitalism, president. He's a racist, stupid piece of shit.
Just ring the shit up.
Stupid piece of shit.
Just ring the shit up.
Fuck off.
Do my bidding. And you should have helped him first in the first place before you threw a temper tantrum, dipshit. He's standing here waiting for you to ring him up. How fucking
get
is
out!
Help your customer!
Fuck off! Fuck off!
A brief silence fell over the room, which Ian broke with laughter. That's when the customer chimed in, siding against the cashier.
This is about money. I just want to bring this thing home to my wife. You know? This got nothing to do with skin color.
I'm not selling
this
you.
This has nothing to do with skin color.
This is my money, man.
Look, I like having a little bit more money in my paycheck. I like paying less for my kids' health care. I got nothing to do with skin color, bro.
Regardless, the employee refused to budge, so Ian decided to leave. He uploaded the video to Facebook with the caption, "Trump Derangement Syndrome Strikes Again." It was shared over 200,000 times, garnering 7.5 million views. The story was also covered by Fox 5, like he suggested. Within hours, the store posted a statement apologizing for the Exhale City Screecher. They denounced the employee, stating he had been fired immediately. Ferguson was lauded by other Trump supporters who praised him for his trolling. He appeared on InfoWars and returned several times to discuss topics like 5G. Despite taking action immediately, Exhale City still continued to receive backlash. The store's Yelp page was flooded with negative reviews, dropping them to 2.5 stars. Several pages were made satirizing their brand, editing the logo into a hammer and sickle. They proceeded to delete all of their accounts on social media. It was only temporary, with their pages now back up, and the store still in operation to this very day. The employee was never publicly identified. Just as 2018 came to an end, a squabble inside a New Mexico GameStop spread across Facebook. The video shows a trans woman threatening an employee over the company's in-store credit. This enraged her so much she threatened to fight him before kicking over a stand of merchandise.
Once again, ma'am!
I said both of you.
No, you said sir! Once again, it's ma'am!
I actually said both of you guys. It was a general.
Right beforehand, you fucking said sir! I need your corporate number! Because I'm going to call them and talk about how I was misgendered several times in this store.
I apologize for that.
I need your corporate number now.
Okay.
Ooh!
Ma'am, I apologize.
Ooh!
I apologize, ma'am. I will get you that number right now.
The woman storms out while threatening to alert the entire LGBT community.
No, you're just going to keep bumping your gums. You're just going to keep bumping your gums and disrespecting trans people in this store, which I plan on telling the entire LGBTQ community. You're going to lose money over this.
If I had a nickel for every time a trans person freaked out at a GameStop, I'd have two nickels, but it's still kind of strange that it's happened twice. No one is entirely certain who shared the video or when it took place. What is clear is that it became a viral sensation on every social media site imaginable. The story received coverage on the Daily Wire, growing especially popular in right-wing circles. They ridiculed her behavior, pointing out it wasn't very ladylike. "It's ma'am" was adopted facetiously alongside explicit transphobia. This certainly wasn't every meme, but concern grew over how it was being used. This did little to hinder its overall popularity exploding, as many public freakouts had before. Things were only exacerbated on January 14th when she agreed to do an interview with local news. The broadcast identified her as Tiffany Moore. They showed several memes, even reading one that contained a slur.
The internet responding to the viral clip with memes like Superman, Aquaman, and Macho Man, Trans Savage.
While Tiffany was upset by the bigotry, she also saw it as an opportunity to raise awareness.
And yeah, I could have reacted a whole lot better.
But you know what? I look back at it. If I could, I wouldn't change a single thing. I would do it 100,000 times again. I would kick over that display 100,000 times again because my actions were justified. I mean, it was blatant and malicious hate.
As an aspiring rapper, she planned to create a song about transgender issues. Watch it hit the GameStop, it's straight off the intentionally misgendered once, you're gonna get corrected. Despite the backlash, she stood by her actions, declaring she had no regrets and would do it all again. With that in mind, users began digging into her past, discovering she had a criminal record. They discovered she went to jail several times and spent 3 years in prison for armed robbery. It was around this time GameStop issued a statement standing by their employee. The incident that occurred between Tiffany Moore and our GameStop associate was unfortunate. We believe our associate acted professionally after misspeaking by apologizing and remaining calm to de-escalate the situation. The lack of support didn't stop her from finishing the song, titled Superman. It was released on February 12, 2019, under the pseudonym Serotonin. That September, Tiffany appeared on the After Prison show to discuss her time behind bars. She gave an even more detailed recount of that fateful day. As it turns out, the incident took place the day after Christmas. Tiffany bought her son a PS4 alongside gifts from other people. He ended up with two of the same game, which she tried to return. This proved unsuccessful as GameStop has a very strict policy. They only offered her in-store credit for games without the plastic wrapper. The employee apparently explained this while calling Tiffany sir several times. That is when the recording starts. Tiffany went on to label the bystander that stepped in as a Karen.
And then a woman who was standing with her kid over one of the game selections, like, comes marching over there, you know, the real Karen type that always wants to speak to the manager. And she comes marching over and she says, "Excuse me, sir."
With her 15 minutes of fame, Tiffany tried to launch an online career. It was unsuccessful, with her YouTube channel still under 1,000 subscribers. She went inactive on the account in 2021, appearing to have left the internet for good. After the GameStop incident, the notable examples of SJW freakouts pretty much faded. Sure, some videos of supposed triggered leftists made their rounds on right-wing Twitter, but the greater public moved on and none of these had viral names or catchphrases. So, what happened? Well, firstly, I think after Donald Trump was elected president, it started to get old. At the beginning, there appeared to be a social movement behind making these people household names. But once the likes of 4chan got their preferred candidate into office, it just started to get old. If you look at Google Trends, you can even see the term hit peak relevance the month Trump won, and it was just downhill from there. Lots of grifters started overusing the terminology of the era, and now if you were to call someone a social justice warrior or triggered unironically, you'd just be ridiculed. What I find interesting is that the genre of naming people in freakouts didn't actually end there, but rather shifted over to the category of Karen freakouts. You see, pretty much immediately after the SJW fad died, people started filming unhinged middle-aged white women and giving them names as a form of ridicule. This, of course, was a bit more agreeable to people across the political spectrum, but also died down by the end of the pandemic. I think there was a lot of people in the political center that liked mocking these social justice warriors because they went so far in one direction. But once they realized they were being used by the likes of Fox News to further an agenda, they didn't want to go with it anymore. This pretty much explains why I think H3 Productions got rid of all those videos. They didn't want to be lumped in with those types. I have to say that when I'm comparing the social justice freakouts and Karen freakouts, at least with the former, the people didn't usually try to dox and ruin the lives of the people they were mocking. And that cannot be said for the Karens. Right now, the trend of gawking at a recorded freakout and latching onto names and catchphrases is not too popular. But I foresee the trend regaining traction in a new form, since humans can't help but watch a dumpster fire. While this might not be the most healthy of online activities, I can't deny that I enjoy the show just as much as anyone else.